Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Active Radio KHII 88.9 FM Podcast. We really appreciate you joining us today. My name is John Hurt, and we're going to interview some of the greatest and most influential minds in our community. By sharing knowledge through our conversations, we will try to impart some information you may need about what is happening in the Tularosa Basin and across southern New Mexico. So let's get to the interviews.
And good morning. I'm Mike Dover with you, and joining me on the phone now, like every Tuesday morning, is my friend Paul Gissing with the Rio Grande Foundation. Good morning, Paul.
Hey, good morning, Mike.
And I tell you what, a busy week. Paul, there seems to be a door open up in Santa Fe. Two resignations, two people retiring, Dr. David Scrace and Secretary of Education Steinhaus are on their way out. What's going on?
Well, it's not just those two folks. There's also Nicole Como, I believe is how she pronounces her name. It's French. That's how I learned my French way back in high school. She is the former head of Medicaid in that department, which is an enormous part of the state and that budget. So John Garcia is another now former Lujan Grisham staffer. He was the lone Republican in the administration and headed up what you would call the General Services Administration, which handles physical buildings and kind of the upkeep of a lot of assets that the state would own. So, yeah, there has been a sudden move to flee the Lujan Grisham administration. Certainly the folks that the two you mentioned, David Scrace and Kurt Steinhaus, are the most impactful because, as we all remember and we talked about week after week after week, Scrace was really the point man and the face of the Lujan Grisham administration's COVID response. It's no surprise that Scrace, the Fauci of New Mexico, is like Dr. Fauci, leaving on much the same timeline. Obviously, the governor has won re-election. Whether that vindicates her COVID response or not, I think we'll only know the truth about that in the distant future. I certainly would be among those who think that both Fauci and Scrace did a poor job, often misrepresenting basic facts and data. But, Scrace wasn't quite as integral to the science discussion. He was just kind of making different pronouncements about, well, the virus is doing this, the virus is doing that. Here's how we need to react here in the state of New Mexico. But Scrace, probably like no government official outside of the governor, has been a face that New Mexicans have gotten to know and maybe like, maybe dislike, but very, very impactful. Obviously, we seem to be finally on the downward trajectory when it comes to COVID-19 and government's role in it. It's unfortunately still a virus, and in some cases even a deadly virus, but in terms of government's response, while New Mexico remains in a state of emergency, one of eight states to be in such a state, it's COVID for most New Mexicans is not a front of mind issue. Ironically or interestingly, Kurt Steinhaus, who many people liked, who transcended ideology in both sides of the aisle, had come and gone a bit with health issues. At one point last year, he basically, it sounded like he really wanted to retire. He said he was stepping back from his role, and then that changed. It was not there was no, it looked like he was kind of one of those U.S. pilots who was shot down over enemy territory and suddenly got placed in front of a camera and was reading the lines. I'm not saying that's what happened in the Lujan Grisham administration, but certainly there was a sudden change of heart by Steinhaus. I think the administration, the governor, pleaded with him to stick around for some unknown amount of time, and this is the amount of time. And education, like few other areas of the state, was devastated by the Lujan Grisham lockdowns. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of money flowing into education. There's a lot of opportunities to make the system better than it has historically been, which is generally speaking at the very bottom, and it is now at the very, very bottom of all the states and District of Columbia. But Steinhaus, I don't know that he either has the energy or has the ability or the wherewithal to really move New Mexico in a more successful direction when it comes to education. Now, by my count, he is the fourth education secretary of the state. So 4 years, four secretaries. Steinhaus had the most staying power, but the governor will be searching for another individual to head up her education policy efforts. And I do find the sudden shift right now during the legislative session to be a bit odd. You know, you would have thought maybe in December you kind of tie a bow on things at the end of the year after the election and say, you know, been nice, we get reelected, but I'm done. Instead, now we have these members of the administration taking off as the legislative session is in full swing. So kind of odd timing, but that's just the way it is with this administration.
Yeah, and Steinhaus was the fourth education secretary under Michelle Lujan Grisham. Is that correct?
That is my count, yes. So wow. four of them in 4 years, yeah. So wow. We'll be on our fifth year.
Well, here we go, and still no real success in education. Paul, the Rio Grande Foundation has released a study about the medical provider shortage. What's going on?
Yeah, this is something that should be top of mind in Santa Fe because of the serious problems, not just in rural communities, but you talk to anybody who is in need of medical care in the state of New Mexico, and they generally will give you an earful about the challenges they face in finding medical providers. The Legislative Finance Committee did a study. We had that conversations about how difficult they found it was for people on Medicaid to find medical providers. But we've talked about the medical malpractice law that passed in 2021. And as we, you know, get into this legislative session, it's pretty evident that the Democrats are not interested in reopening that medical malpractice bill for discussion. It takes full effect in 2024. So you're going to continue to see, because I think that is right now the dominant issue. If you wanted to address New Mexico's medical provider shortage, you would have to basically repeal the 2021 medical malpractice law that is a massive giveaway for trial attorneys, that raises the caps, and it makes the insurance more expensive for doctors. So that's the easy low-hanging fruit. This is a detailed report that we have on Heirs of Enchantment and RioGrandeFoundation.org. It's called Solutions for New Mexico's Medical Provider Shortage, Part 2. The first part was really getting into some of the numbers as to what the shortage looks like, which areas of practice have the worst shortage, how New Mexico stacks up, not just against its neighbors, but against the rest of the country, other regions. So those are some of the big issues. And then we look at the number two solution, which is stop taxing medical providers via the gross receipts tax. Mm-hmm. We're in conversations to get something introduced on this particular issue. We're talking tax reform at the state level. We should not have Medicaid taxing doctors, and preferably deductibles and copays should not be taxed as well, although that's an additional conversation. So that's the second way. And then the third is back to that LOC report, reducing Medicaid dependency. We have 47% of our state on Medicaid, and Medicaid is a program that famously underpays medical providers by a factor of, you know, it's maybe 20% sometimes of what they would get from providers in the private sector, health insurance companies. So Medicaid and just kind of pushing people to get into the private sector insurance market as opposed to relying on this government program, which New Mexico's roles are very bloated. But the legislature seems to be going in the opposite direction with more and more generous payouts and ability to stay on Medicaid. So unfortunately, that doesn't seem to be happening. And then expanding scope of practice and telemedicine. And, you know, one of the bright silver linings of COVID was the increased use and comfort and telemedicine as a option for people. Certainly, you know, in telemedicine is, of course, when you probably on your computer, you can do it on a phone, I suppose, but it's nice to have that video available. And you have a medical appointment with somebody who may be a licensed physician in the state of New Mexico, but is physically coming to you from Texas or Colorado or Wyoming or some other state where they're actually physically located. You can get a lot more done in terms of the number of appointments and patients seen in telemedicine. It's not perfect. It's not got every feature of an in-person visit, but not every doctor's appointment requires an in-person visit in real terms. And then scope of practice is where you have people who are qualified to practice in certain areas of medicine that maybe they could do other things, add to that and make it easier for them to serve patients. And New Mexico, quite honestly, we've done a fair amount of research on our scope of practice laws, things like nurse practitioners. That's the one that people really can understand is, you know, you go to a doctor for just a routine appointment, or maybe you have need of something like an antibiotic and you show up to the doctor. It may not be a doctor at all. It may be a nurse practitioner, which you can find in greater supply oftentimes than doctors. So those are four of our recommendations. I would recommend people check out the entire report at riograndefoundation.org.
Paul, I've got my hand here, a story from the Norimeyer Sackett. Governor Grisham announces bipartisan legislation to establish rural health care delivery fund, Senate Bill 7. Have you seen this?
Yeah, I have seen the concept and the legislation. And you know, this is down the list. These are kinds of things that are on our list. And New Mexico right now, as we've talked about, has a massive budget surplus. Mm-hmm. So when you have that kind of money, there are get out of jail free cards, if you will, kind of like playing the game of Monopoly. If you want to get out of jail, you can just buy one of those get out of jail free cards. That's what the state has the ability to do right now, which is to avoid the policy challenge by buying something in the marketplace and setting up a rural health fund where the state spends some of that oil and gas surplus to pay doctors to serve in rural communities around the state is one of many ways that you can use that surplus. And I suppose within the scope of different things that that surplus can be used for, there are worse examples. Others in the medical area include paying off doctors and other medical providers' college bills. You know, just those loans are very expensive, and if they can come to New Mexico and you say you got to practice here for 3 years or 5 years, and we'll pay off some part of your student loan debt, that's something that's possible as well. Just increasing Medicaid reimbursement. All of these are ways to keep or attract more doctors and medical providers in the state of New Mexico. So that's certainly an option.
Yeah, there you go. Well, last week was School Choice Week. I'm surprised to see this. Bills have been introduced by both Democrats and Republicans on this issue.
Yeah, kind of an interesting thing here. One is one of these bills, and you know, last week is a national, I should say, celebration of the idea and the freedom associated with educational choice and the ability for parents and families to choose the educational opportunities that make sense for them, not be pushed into a district school that may or may not work well for that particular child. So, you know, we obviously talk extensively about school choice in the state of New Mexico and how it can help really move our education system in a better direction. But there are bills. One is, and we talked about education savings accounts, where essentially a significant chunk of the money spent on educating an individual student is shifted to the families that can be used for private school, tutoring, homeschooling, resources, et cetera, et cetera. That's SB 109. And that's similar to what was done in Arizona earlier this year. Now, for the record, I think this bill, Senator Craig Brandt of Rio Rancho, it's going to be a very uphill struggle for this bill to even get out of its first committee, the Senate Finance Committee, Education Committee. That's again SB 109. I'm hopeful that it gets traction, but the unions tend to kill anything like this, especially from Republicans, fairly quickly. Now, the bill that's more interesting, I think, is SB 113. And this gets back to something that the Rio Grande Foundation worked on with the individual here that's introducing the bill. That is Democrat Senator Jerry Ortiz Epino. Now, folks who follow New Mexico politics may know that Jerry Ortiz Epino was one of the original, the first real progressive kind of far left legislators. He's been around for a long time. In fact, I believe that the reason he's introducing this bill is because he's not running for re-election, and so he doesn't have to worry about upsetting the unions. Now, he's a state senator, and we'll have 2 years, two cycles. But we worked with him on the concept that he's got going here, which is tax credits. And the basic idea would be that either a business or an individual with a tax liability to the state could take a credit against that, so you're not paying more in the way of taxes, but instead of sending, say, $5,000 to the state of New Mexico to settle your personal income tax, you are taking the credit and you get to donate a significant portion of that credit to a local nonprofit that then makes scholarships for low-income children on the school lunch program. That is the general model of what Senator Ortiz Epino's bill, SB 113, would do. And these bills are both sitting, awaiting hearing in the Senate Education Committee. I don't have particularly high hopes that either one will pass, but certainly having a Democrat with the standing of Senator Ortiz Epino, somebody who's on and off done work on the education issue for over a decade now. We worked with him on similar bills back in 2010, 2011, 2012. It's nice to see that he's at least still engaged in the issue, even though he took a break because the unions basically told him, stop doing this. And then now he's on his way out the door. He, I think, is trying to do the right thing. So kudos to him.
Well, you know, when you're on your way out the door, I guess as good a time as any to do the right thing. So, all right. Well, this one is going to, really not make some folks happy. Despite a massive surplus, some powerful Democrats are pushing to raise taxes. HB 119 would add 6.5% and 6.9% top rate on top of the 5.9 rate. I mean, really?
Really, yeah.
Wow.
We've talked about Bill Richardson, former governor, Democrat, mm-hmm. Who was in charge mostly during the 2000 era, who preceded Susana Martinez. Bill Richardson was a flawed individual who did some things that I certainly didn't agree with, but he took our state's personal income tax down to 4.9%. That was the top rate. And then when Lujan Grisham took control in 2019, she raised that rate to 5.9%. Now, as we continue to see New Mexico's Democrats moving further and further left, we see bills to further increase the state's income tax rate beyond even that 5.9%. And that 5.9%, I want to say, kicks in around $300,000. So at a pretty high level there when it comes to those paying that very, very top rate. $315,000 to be exact. So HB 119, and the thing is this is another bill. We talk about who these bills are introduced by. This is a bill introduced by House Tax Committee Chair Christine Chandler, Senate Tax Committee Chair Benny Shindo, and Senate Majority Leader Peter Wirth. So you pretty much, if you're introducing a tax bill, these are the most powerful people in the entire legislature. And they would increase the top rate tax on income to 6.5% for any married couple making over $200,000. So we're talking a pretty broad swath of New Mexico's population. People who, by and large, right now are paying 4.9% would have 6.5% taken off the top there. And then a 6.9% rate would kick in at $500,000. So the 6.9% rate is for true high earners. But, HB 119 is the bill. It's something that is awaiting a hearing in a House Tax and Revenue Committee. But again, given the characters involved here and their powerful nature, I've got to think that this bill has some form of legs that it might get traction. So something definitely to keep an eye on. It does have some reductions at the low levels. This is a classic progressive tax bill where there's some tax reductions for folks at the lower income levels. But ultimately, the last thing New Mexico needs, especially when we're sitting on this massive surplus, is two new top income tax rates.
Wow. Wow. So my question is then, as you know, when they talk about taxing the rich, such a small percentage of the country is in that category, and New Mexico can't be much different, a small percentage of people making $500,000 more. So my question is, is the governor thrilled to be paying these extra taxes?
Is the governor?
Yeah.
I don't know. but yeah, she would certainly fit into that category, and we'll see. I mean, this is a bill. It definitely has some influence behind it. There was talk, and I believe the governor, even in some of her public messaging, has said things about making the tax code more progressive. But we'll see. The legislature has a lot going on, and they'll have a lot to say about this particular bill, this issue. I think politically, it is going to be tough for them to say, let's increase taxes. Because, once you get down to $200,000 for a married couple, that's not a tiny fraction of, that's not just taxing the rich. That's taxing a fair number of upper middle class folks in the state of New Mexico.
Right. Yeah. So we'll see. Well, some bills reining in the governor's emergency powers have passed out of their first committee and on their way to the House Judiciary Committee. With such a Democrat-controlled House and Senate that we have in New Mexico, does this see a chance of seeing daylight?
That's an excellent question, and only time will tell. First and foremost, I have been up in Santa Fe a few times, and there was a discussion yesterday in a committee about HJR 3. Now, HJR 3 doesn't maybe ring as a bill number. That's because it's a constitutional amendment. So it has the benefit of it would avoid Governor Lujan Grisham's veto pen. It has the drawback of if you pass HJR 3 through this cycle, this legislature, you have a vote of the people then, and then you have a further legislative session to enact enabling legislation. We're seeing this regarding HB 1, the Amendment 1, the bill providing pre-K money out of the permanent fund. So constitutional amendments take some time, but the good news is it would give the legislature a seat at the table after 90 days in an emergency, and it makes that a constitutional process, avoiding the governor's veto pen. HB 80 has also passed its initial committee. That would be legislation along the same lines. They're both heading to the House Judiciary Committee. Gail Chasey is the chair of that committee. She's an extreme progressive left-wing person out of Albuquerque. She has said, and I don't even understand this statement, but she said that she didn't want to put the legislature back in session during a COVID pandemic or an emergency because they were not a professional group of legislators. Apparently, according to Chasey, you can only do your job if you are taking home a official paycheck and not doing things the way our legislature currently does things, which makes no sense. We had virtual legislative sessions or completely or partially virtual sessions during the pandemic, and nobody seemed to bat an eye about that. So one would think that after 90 days of emergency, you could have a Zoom meeting to put the legislature in the discussion in terms of restrictions and COVID whatnot. But that's just, looking ahead. The good news is that at least some Democrats are now, after this election, willing to say, the legislature needs a seat at the table here. We can't just let the governor, whoever they may be, dictate things. And by the way, as I mentioned, 8 states are still in an emergency. Some of those may surprise you. Since it's only 8, I'm going to read off the list. Now, California, no surprise there. Colorado, pretty liberal state. New Mexico, another blue state. Texas. You're like, what? Texas?
Yeah.
Illinois, Georgia, so another red-ish state. Then you got Delaware and Rhode Island. So those are the 8 states that are still in emergency. Kind of an eclectic mix. And I don't understand why Texas and Georgia are still in that emergency status. But the fact is that I care about New Mexico, and we should not be in an emergency at this point. But we still are, and this is on errorsofenchantment.com. It's from the National Academy for State Public Health, and something that I think we need the legislature to have a seat at the table. And we don't have that system in place.
Well, maybe everybody will come in line and get rid of this, because on public news service this morning, they stated that Joe Biden will eliminate the health order on May 11th. So, hey, maybe everybody say, okay, it is done. We can move on.
Yeah, and that may be the approach that finally changes New Mexico in its situation. I think if I had to peg it, I've said this before, I think the emergency has a lot to do with federal dollars going into the state. And once that supply of federal dollars dries up, I suspect that our emergency will also. But we shall see.
And just like that, the man standing up out of a wheelchair, it's a miracle. So
exactly.
Hey, Paul, you know, we talked about a lot of the bills and stuff, and one of the things we need to talk about, this is a great help for people if they want to check this out. Let's talk about your Freedom Index bill tracking site.
Yeah, the Freedom Index is a tool that we use that's available at riograndefoundation.org. You go to the top right-hand side and click on Freedom Index, and you can find out how your legislators are voting on floor votes. Because the session is still on the early side, we don't have a ton of votes sitting up there yet, but as those bills that we have rated make their way to the floor of either the House or the Senate, they will be given a numerical, they'll be given a number. The better the bills are positive, the worse bills are the negative. And right now, the main piece of legislation that has passed through is the feed bill, which funds the session. That's HB 1. Unfortunately, the feed bill is normally just a bill to do, like I said, and just pay salaries, manage the upkeep, buy the toilet paper for the roundhouse building, and keep the lights on, that kind of stuff. Well, whether, you know, we talked about the policy implications, but whatever your view on professionalizing the legislature and paying them salaries and hiring staff, et cetera, I think the feed bill was an incorrect vehicle to put a study of whether this is a good idea or not. But they did it. Democrats control things. And that is the vote rated so far. So most Republicans, not all, voted against a study for the feed bill, in the feed bill. And you'll see the ratings for each of those legislators, either -4 or +4. But I would say that within the next week or so, you'll really see the start of bills getting to the floor, and then they'll have some substantive votes on where things are heading on some of these bills. And I would just encourage people to kind of check back on a semi-regular basis, and certainly after the legislative session is complete. But we do our best to keep this information updated regularly throughout the session.
That's a great tool. Well, one last thing here. A new Wallet Hub report says New Mexico is one of the smallest wealth gaps by race as ethnicity. That kind of undermines a lot of left-wing talking points, doesn't it?
Yeah. And Wallet Hub is, you know, one of these national sites. They do a lot of number crunching and data. And I always get the emails in my inbox. And some of them are kind of off the wall. Sometimes their methodology doesn't seem to hold water, but I particularly felt that this one was interesting because you tend to hear that talking point, as you said, from folks on the left with regard to, oh, well, you know, in the state of New Mexico, of course, Hispanics or, you know, African Americans or whoever doesn't do as well, and we need X, Y, and Z programs. We need all kinds of government spending in order to close this wealth gap. And, you know, I look at this data, and New Mexico's 45th. So that means we have a very small gap between the races when it comes to wealth, which, you know, on one side you say, well, that's a good thing. Well, you look at it in a different direction, and I kind of say, well, maybe it's not a good thing because we're one of the poorest states in the country. I'd rather have more inequality, personally at least, if we all had higher living standards and made more money. You know, some of the states that are higher up the list are a lot more wealthy and prosperous than our New Mexico. States like Minnesota, third highest inequality, interestingly enough, but very high living standards. Wisconsin is another state. Something about those northern cold states. They tend to have relatively low levels of inequality of wealth among their various races. And then you look at another thing, which is that when it comes to the very richest people in each state, New Mexico further is a poor state. If you have relatively low-earning wealthy people, that also tends to reduce inequality. It doesn't do anything for the low end of the scale. They're still poor, but it means that the top-level people, they are somewhat more equal in terms of their finances than the states with a lot of money, and you know, just as close as neighboring Texas, where Elon Musk, according to a chart from 2022 by Visual Capitalist, has him at $272 billion. You know, you've got former Albuquerque resident Jeff Bezos in Washington State at $167.6 billion, and you can look throughout that map. It's a very entertaining little map that I put in that heirsofenchantment.com. New Mexico is just a big kind of blob in the southwestern corner of the state because, according to this report, we have zero billionaires. So, again, doesn't do anything for the poor folks in the state of New Mexico. It just means that the top end of the income scale in this state, and I don't think it's just limited to the billionaires. I think it's also this state has so few businesses, no businesses in the S&P 500. And those are great ways to generate wealth. Yeah, we see the oil and gas money, but that's a resource that's extracted and then moved around to global markets and often processed and refined and then sold by companies headquartered in other states. And again, that's the unfortunate way that New Mexico has wound up working. And I attribute that almost entirely to economic policies in Santa Fe. And so some good, some bad. It's an interesting report, though, and I think people should check it out. Heirsofenchantment.com. You can find that Wallet Hub report.
Absolutely. And Paul, coming up on Thursday night on Tipping Point, New Mexico, you've got Drew Johnson with you, and you're going to be talking about government waste and election laws. That sounds like that's going to be a really great program.
Well, Drew and I go back over 20 years to our days in Washington, D.C. at the National Taxpayers Union, and he was at the foundation. Yeah, it's a great conversation. Drew has been, like I have, in the public policy sphere for a very long time. He actually, when he was in Tennessee, did a public records request. In some states, you can find out how big people's utility bills are, and happened to do a public records request for Al Gore's home electric bill and found out that it was, let's just say, very, very high. And it was a national news story for weeks on end. Drew recently ran for Clark County Commission, which is a very prominent office in the state of Nevada, lost by 300 votes. So we talk a lot about election integrity and election issues like mail-in voting. And check that conversation out. It's a worthwhile one.
It's going to be a good one. Paul Gessing with the Rio Grande Foundation. Paul, thanks for joining me this morning. Always a good conversation with you. And we look forward to having you on again next Tuesday. Have a great week, buddy, and don't catch the blue while you're up there.
All right. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you. Paul Gessing with the Rio Grande Foundation, our discussion every Tuesday morning.
We are Active Radio, 88.9 FM, KHII Cloudcroft, 100.5 FM Alamogordo, and 102.3 KEDU Ruidoso.